Rabbi and our sages taught in a brisa. The verse about oxen talks about a shor muad. Behemis ish o isha. If it kills a man or a woman, the owner has to pay money as well as the ox being put to death. Amar Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Akiva asked, "Ma baza lamdenu? Why did the pasuk mention man and woman? Im lachai v'lo isha ki ish. If it's to say that if the ox kills a woman, it's as bad as an ox killing a man, and the owner of the ox has to pay kofar. Harik farnamar. But we have another pasuk right before it. Ki igach shor. When an ox will gore, es ish o es isha, a man or a woman, which is actually a pasuk in regards to a tam. But either way, you know, you only become a muad if you start with being a tam. Elo lahakish ish al ish. So it must be that the pasuk is coming to link woman to man, ma ish nizak of liyarshav, and to say, when an ox kills a man, so the money of the damages go to his children. Afisha, so too when an ox kills a woman, nizakel or sheha, the damages go to her children and not to her husband. So now why would damages not go to the husband? After all, the husband usually inherits his wife. We have a rule, the husband inherits his wife, he inherits the property that his wife owns. He doesn't inherit property that his wife could own. He doesn't yarshin ra'ui, things that she could get. He only gets things that she actually had possession of during her lifetime. Muchzak, what she actually held on. So the Gemara now asks, v'sav Rabbi Akiva, does Rabbi Akiva believe v'yaris la'baal, that the husband doesn't inherit his wife's damages that are due to her once she's dead? Iva tanabu, we lived in a braisa. The pasuk says v'yarash osa, the husband will inherit her, his wife. Mikan shabal yoishas ishto. So from here we see that her husband does inherit his wife. Did Rabbi Akiva? So Rish Lakish said, when Rabbi Akiva says that her husband doesn't inherit his wife, it's when the wife is dead, and we're talking about the payment for her death, for the kofar payment. Lo amar ela b'kofar. He was only referring to the atonement payment. Hoel vein mishtalim ela la'achar misa. Since the kofar payment only gets triggered once she's already dead. Once she's already dead, then there's an obligation of kofar created. But before she was dead, when she was alive, there wasn't even an obligation. So he only has a right to inherit land or objects or cash that she actually owned in her lifetime. And then she dies. But kofar she never owned. It didn't exist in her lifetime. It's after she died that it was created. So that he doesn't have a right to, that her kids get. So while she was alive, the kofar payment is only something that we can call ro'i, something that she could get. It's something that she had the ability to get, but not something that she actually had possession of. Ein abal notel b'roi ki b'muchzak. A husband can inherit his wife. What does he inherit from his wife? He inherits from the things that she was already muchzeket in. She was already holding. But he doesn't have any rights to the things that during her lifetime were only, she had the option of getting or the possibility of getting, but she had not yet actually gained any ownership of her.
Does that mean that during the marriage, if she goes to work and creates some kind of income?
Good, an investment.
The husband is not entitled to that
income? The things that grow. Let's say she owned a store.
Right.
And then, after her death, suddenly something happened and some new money came in for that store that wasn't there. She didn't have a right to. He may not be entitled to it. So then you get to the whole question. Once she already owned the store, so she already had the inventory. Now the inventory goes up in value after her death. Maybe that's already considered something she already had. Or is that new value considered something new? So we'll see. That'll be discussed
in today's daf. But still she's alive, but she's working and she's getting an income.
No, that he's entitled to. That's Ma'asi Yadayim.
So the husband is entitled to
that? Yeah, he's entitled to her wages in return for the fact that he gives her food. And we learned in Maseches Ksuba, she could say, I don't want your food and I want to keep my own wages. And she's allowed to do that.
Isn't it a conflict here, Rabbi? Between you just said that if she dies and she wins some properties or whatever, the property goes to her family.
No, if she
not to the husband.
No, if there were things that she owned during her lifetime, then she dies, the husband gets those things.
Correct.
But if new assets come into her domain that she never had any holding on while she was alive, that the husband's not entitled to.
No, if she wins the lotto, the husband is not entitled to that lotto?
If the lotto happens after she died? No.
No.
Sophie has
but if she's still alive,
she owned the ticket before.
Maybe in a better case. She owned the ticket before, right? But a better case would be she died, and then a neighbor comes by and says, you know, there was a... Then her family gets a letter. There had been some aunt who died somewhere in Mexico, who's sending over as part of the estate $50,000 to her, but she's no longer alive. The husband would not be entitled to that because during her lifetime she had no holding of that in that $50,000. It's new money. That's roughly during her lifetime. It's money that she could get. There was a possibility of her getting it if her aunt were to die. But she didn't have a stake in it. So the Gemara says, my time, how do we know that kofar is a monetary payment which is only created after the death of the victim, and therefore during the lifetime of this woman, there was no holding in that payment? Because the pasuk says, "Vehemis ish o isha." If the ox kills a man or a woman, then after the ox killed a man or a woman, hashor yisakel, the ox gets stoned. You couldn't stone it before the person died, and then after it gets stoned, the gambal of yumas, and also the owner dies in the sense im kofer yushas alav, in the sense that he has to pay an atonement, if an atonement is placed upon him. So the atonement is only placed upon him after the ox was convicted, and the ox is only convicted after the person died. That means that the payment, the obligation, is only created after the death. So the Gemara now asks, Uben Ezekin, Lo Amar Rabbi Akiva? Now what happens in regards to other damages? Those other damages that were owed to her, and then she died, the husband would be able to inherit. Iva time we learned in a brisa, hikasa isha, a man who hits a woman, viyatsu yiladeh, and as we learned yesterday, he causes her to lose her pregnancy, her fetus. No se nezek vitzar leisha, he has to give the payment of pain and damages to the woman. And then the special pasuk says, utumei vlados, and to pay for the fetus, labal, to the father of the fetus, to her husband. Ein baal, let's say the husband is dead by the time he wants to pay nosim yoshev. He gives the money for the fetus to those who inherit the father. Ein isha, if the woman is dead, nosim yoshev, he gives her pain payment and he gives her damage payment to her children. But it doesn't say he gives it to her husband. Let's say the woman who he had caused her to lose her pregnancy and he damaged her was a woman who had been a slave who had been freed, ogiores, or a convert. So those are people who don't have family. They don't have children to inherit them if they haven't yet had children. So then zachas, so then the damager can keep the money. So what do you see here? Here we're talking about nezek and tsar. And nezek and tsar, it says, goes to her relatives, not to the husband. But why? During her lifetime already, there was the obligation. So let the husband inherit it. Rabba said that price is talking about a grusha, a woman who was divorced. In other words, she was married, somebody damaged her, and then she lost the fetus, and then her husband divorced her, and then if she dies, so the money that's owed to her is not going to go to the husband, because he's not her husband anymore. It's going to go to her children. The Chenam Rabbi Nachman said, the grusha. We're talking about a divorced woman in this brisa. So Amri, they asked in the yeshiva, grusha nami, if she's a divorced woman, then tiflog b'dmei vlados. Then the money for the fetus should be divided between her and her husband. Her husband should get some, but she should get some. Amri Rav Papa said no. In regards to the damage, in regards to the pain payment, that's owed to her. Once she's divorced, her husband's not going to inherit her. Her children will inherit her. But in regards to the money for the fetus, HaTorah zichtet mei vladus labal. There's a special decree of the Pasuk. The Pasuk says that the father gets it. The father gets it. And so even though they're divorced, the father gets it. In fact, afilu ba'ala biznus, even if a man wasn't married at all, a man just had had intercourse with a woman in a loose way, and because of that intercourse, made the woman pregnant, and then someone else came and caused that pregnancy to end, that person has to give the money to the father, even though the father is not a husband, even though the father is not a mensch. My taima, why? That's the pasuk. Amakra, the pasuk says, kasher yashis alav bal ha'isha, as shall be placed upon him, on the damager, by the husband of the woman. The Torah says that this is money that goes to the father. But other things wouldn't go to him. So the Gemara now asks, why did we have to say, we're talking about a woman who's divorced, the Nukma, why didn't we say, L'Rabba, as we're going to see soon, according to Rabba, the reason why her children got the money and not her husband, Kigon Shigavu Maos, in a case where the money was already collected. Rav Nachman, and according to Rav Nachman, Kigon Shigavu Karka, in a case that they already collected land. What do you mean? Amar Rabba, we learned the following argument in Masechet Baba Basra. This is in regards to a firstborn inheritance. We know the Torah says that a firstborn gets a double portion. So let's say there are two boys and there are three fields that the father had and the father dies. So the firstborn gets two of the fields and the other boy gets one field. If there were five boys, so then the fields are divided into six equal-sized parcels. The firstborn gets two of them and the other four boys each get one parcel. That's the mitzvah that the firstborn gets a double portion, pishnayim. However, the Gemara explains, the firstborn's only entitled to a double portion in those properties that the father actually owned. If the father didn't yet own the property, but there was a possibility of the father getting the property, he didn't have a chazaka in the property during his lifetime. It was roi, it was property that could come to him. The firstborn doesn't get a double portion in those properties that were only delivered after the death of the father. So we learned in Maseches Baba Basra, in the case of a father who had money owed to him, so Rabba and Rav Nachman, and then the father dies. So Rabba said, Gavu Karka Yeshlo. If after the death of the father, what they collect for the debt that was owed to the father was land, then the firstborn gets a double portion in that land. Because when a father lent money, there's right away a lien on all the land of the borrower. So now some of that land was actually delivered as payment for the money. So that's land that the father always had. The father always had a connection to it. So in the lifetime of the father, he was already muhsak, and therefore the firstborn gets a double portion in it. And Rav Nachman, but gavumos, if the loan was repaid with cash, so the father never had any holding in that cash during his lifetime. So therefore, the firstborn doesn't get a double portion out of that cash. However, Rabbi Nachman said, Gavu Mos Yeshlo. If the loan was repaid with cash, then the firstborn gets a double portion in it. Why? Because the father had given cash as the loan. He had lent cash.
The loan has value. The loan is as good as cash.
I'm not sure it's as good as cash. I don't know that they had markets that were as...
It's like land, it's an asset.
Okay, maybe that's Rav Nachman's view. So Rav Nachman says, if the father... Rav Nachman says, the father lent cash. Now, after the death of the father, the borrower repays cash. So basically, the cash that's repaid reminds us of the cash that was given out. The cash that was given out was the father's. The cash was paid back. So the son, the firstborn, has a portion in debt. That's considered money that the father always had. However, gavu karka, if the loan is repaid with land, so that's the new thing. The father never had this land. That's new. So that's a new thing. The father had lent cash. This is a new thing. So in the new thing, it only comes after the death of the father. The firstborn doesn't get a double portion in. So ain't low. So the same way we had that argument in regards to loans, why don't we say that's the case here in regards to the payment of the damages, that according to, whether the husband should get it or not, depends on how it was paid. Was it paid with cash? Was it paid with land? Amri, they said in the yeshiva, Hani Mili Lipnei Ma'arava, Alibad Rabbanan. That whole discussion between Rabbi and Rav Nachman is only according to the people of Israel. And the sages of Israel believe that profits that appreciate after the death is considered ra'ui. In other words, new gains that come after death, that's not considered something that was muhsak. But kikam rihacha, but the reason why we gave a different answer over here, because we're following Kerebi, we're following the view of Rebbe. And according to the view of Rebbe, if the property appreciates, that is considered muhsak. And therefore, if we're going to say that the woman was paid with cash or paid with land, it wouldn't matter. The damage occurred during her lifetime. So that's considered an appreciation of something that already started, according to Rabbi. So something that already started is already considered muhzak. So the husband would be entitled to get to it. So why doesn't the husband get? It's because the woman is divorced. That's why we had to give the answer of being her being divorced.
Rabbi, if doesn't it create an animosity among the siblings of the firstborn getting
that's the mitzvah abortion? Of the Torah. So as some say as a joke, you know, the parents experiment in trying to raise the firstborn. So he has to get compensation for the fact that he was the guinea pig. He gets a double portion. The later kids, the parents have already figured out how to do the right thing. So already there it's different.
Not a joke.
Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish. Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish taught, Shor Sheimus is ha'evit, shalo b'kavana, if an ox kills a slave. Now remember, we learned if an ox is a mu'ad and it kills a regular person, there's a payment of kofar. If the mu'ad ox kills a slave, there's a payment of 30 shekel, regardless of whether the slave is worth a shekel or worth 20 or 50 shekel. There's always a payment of 30 shekel. Rish Lakish taught if the ox that killed the slave didn't try to kill, he did it without intention, then pater mishloshim shekel. The owner doesn't have to pay the 30 shekel. Shenemar, because the pasuk says kesef shloshim shkalim yitzein la'adonav, he should give 30 shekel to the master of the slave, ashor yisakel, and the ox is to be stoned. So the Torah links the stoning of the ox with the payment of the 30 shekel. So kozman shashor b'skila b'ayla mishalim shloshim shekel. If the ox is an ox that's going to be put to death, then the owner of the ox has to pay 30 shekel. But ain't ashor b'skila, but in this case, since the ox was not intentional, so the ox is not going to be put to death. And a b'ayla mishalim shloshim skalim, the b'ayla don't have to pay the 30 shekel. That's halacha number one. Halacha number two, amar rabba rabba taught, shor shemes ben chorin. An ox that kills a person who's not a slave, where normally there'd be the payment of kofar if it's a mu'ad to kill people. Shalom b'kavana, but if it did it this time without intention, pater mi kofar, the owner doesn't have to pay kofar. Again, the same pasuk. Shenem, ashor yisak v'gam ba'al of yumas, im kofar yushasalav. The ox is to be stoned, and the owner is going to have to pay kofar. So when does the owner have to pay kofar? The pasuk linked it to when the ox gets stoned. Kozman shashor b'skila by the mishalim kofar. If the ox is going to be stoned because it did something deliberately, the owner has to pay kofar. In ashor b'skila and a by the mishalim kofar. But here, where the ox is not going to be stoned because it did it inadvertently, the owner doesn't have to pay kofar. Eis ve'abaye, abaye challenged Rabba's lesson. We learned in a Mishnah in Ksubos, a man who walks into court and says, hey, Mishori Esploni, my ox killed Ruvain. So it's all from his own words. Oshor Shoploni, he says that my ox killed Ruvain's ox. He has to pay, even though he was the one who admitted it. So my lops, what do you mean he has to pay? What's he paying? If he says my ox killed Reuven, he's saying he has to pay kofar. Now one second. If a person admits to having committed a capital crime, is the person put to death by his own admission? Of course not. So if the owner of the ox is the reason why we know that the ox killed, the ox also wouldn't be put to death. And here you see that even though the ox is not being put to death, the Mishnah says in Ksubos, the man who, only based on his word did we know that his ox killed a person, has to pay. That means he has to pay kofar. So you see that kofar payment is not linked to the animal being put to death. Even when the animal is not being put to death, there can be a kofar payment. Says the Gemara, lo, that Mishnah is not referring to the kofar payment. That Mishnah is referring to the following. Very interesting. Lidamim, to the value payment. Amazing. Amazing. If my ox goes and kills someone, so I have to pay a kofar payment, but I also have to pay a value payment. I have to pay for the fact that that person was alive and now he's dead. That's a certain value. So in a second you'll ask me, but I thought that was kofar already.
Yeah.
Kofar is d'mei nizak. So the Ravid has a very interesting explanation. The Ravid says, we know there are different ways to value people. If a person says, my value is on me and I owe it to Hekdesh, we take him to the slave market, we see how much he's worth, and that's how much he has to give to Hekdesh. But if he says, erki alai, the word erech, my value on me, so then there's set amounts given at the end of Parshas, b'chukosai. So since kofar is an atonement, the value of kofar is the erech value, based on a person's age, let's say when he's before, you know, between 30 and 50, it's 50 shekel, whereas the damim value is how much he's worth in the slave market. So in a case where he's not going to be paying kofar, so but still the owner has to pay the nezek value, the damages, how much this person is worth in the slave market, and that he has to pay based on his own admission. That's not a knas, it's not a fine. We don't say there modu b'knas pater, that he has to pay based on his own admission.
Yes.
Yeah. Question is he?
Killed.
Right.
That's Abba saying. So
well, because the ox is not being put to death. An ox is treated like a person. If a person does something by mistake, he wouldn't be put to death. So if the ox killed by mistake, we're not going to put the ox to death. If the ox is not going to be put to death, then the owner doesn't have to pay kofar.
Who determines the intention of the ox?
You need to have zoologists. You see that the Torah scholars need to learn all disciplines. They need to know animal nature. They need to learn everything. They need to know. That's right.
So at any time, if the mu'at kills also, let's say potentially the whole thing, the man is paid in addition to the kofar?
That's what it sounds like from this Gemara.
So there is sort of an estate involved.
That's right. That's right.
So if the owner of the ox says there's no witnesses and he says that my ox killed this person?
Right.
He only pays the value.
The value of the person killed. That's
but
right.
How about there's only one other witness?
Same. Same. So, Abaye didn't accept this. He said, Edamim, if we're talking about here the value, Ema Seifa, read the end of that Mishnah, that if he admits and he says, Hey, Mishorius Avdo Shalploni, my ox killed so-and-so slave, Eino Mishayim Alpiatzma. He doesn't have to pay 30 shekel, because 30 shekel is obviously a set amount, it's a knas, it's a fine. You never pay fines based on your own admission. Vidamim, if we're talking about values, Amailo, let him pay the value. After all, there's a value to the slave, certainly, and that value has been damaged by killing him. He should pay it to the owner. Amarle, Sarabba said to Abaye, Chilm l'shlilach, I could answer you, Reisha dam v'seifa knas. The beginning of the Mishnah that says a person pays when he admits that his ox kills a person, that was referring to the value payment. And the end of the Mishnah that says a person doesn't pay when he admitted that his ox killed a slave is referring to the kofar payment. But you know what? That's not a great explanation, right? Because then the Mishnah is suddenly switching the subject of its conversation without telling us that. So it's a tough answer. I'm not going to give that to you. You know what? I'll tell you like this. The whole Mishnah is not talking about kofar payments. It's talking about value payments. Miu, however, turning now to Mem Gimel Amud Beis, Ben Chorin, D'mishalim Kofar Al Piatzmo. When the guy says, my ox went and killed a person who was a Ben Chorin, a free person, where there could be a scenario where you would have to pay kofar based on his own admission. then he has to pay damim, he has to pay value based on his own admission. Hey, I mean, what's the case where you'd have to pay kofar based on his own admission? Let's say witnesses come and they say that the ox killed this ben chorin, but lo yadi, the witnesses didn't know. Itam havi mu'ud havi. If the ox that killed the person was a tam where there's an exemption from paying kofar, or it's a mu'ud where you have to pay kofar. V'amar Mari, and the master of the ox, the owner of the ox, says, Mu'ud, who I know it's a mu'ud, and therefore there is a kofar payment, to mishalim kofar al piatzmo. Then he would have to pay kofar based on his own admission. So therefore, since sometimes the kofar payment could be triggered by his own admission, therefore, hey, chadalek edim, in the case where you don't have witnesses and there is no kofar payment. Nevertheless, when he admits that it was his ox had killed someone, Meshalim Damim, he has to pay the value of that person. But Gabayevid, but in regards to the 30 of a slave, Einu Meshalim Knas al Piatzmo, that's a fine, so we would never convict someone based on his own words. Hey, Chidami, so therefore, what's the case? Yasi Edim, if witnesses came, Vasidu Beit HaKatan, and they told him, your ox killed a slave. But we, the witnesses, don't know. We tam have mu'ud have. If your ox is a tam that doesn't have to pay the 30, or it's a mu'ud that has to pay the 30. V'amar mare mu'ud hu, and the owner says, my ox is a mu'ud, I know I should be paying the 30. Lo mishtalim knas al piyatzma, he doesn't have to pay the 30, because it's based on his own words, and modu b'knas is potter. And since there's no situation where the kofar payment, the 30 shekel of kofar, would be triggered by his own words, hey chadaleka edim, where we don't have witnesses, and there couldn't be any kofar payment, and we're only talking about a damim payment, we're talking about a value payment, the damages payment, lo mishalim damim, he doesn't pay damim, based on his own words.
But Rabbi, kofar is an atonement, so the guy wants, he's a decent guy, he's a man, he wants to atone for his ox, he knows his ox killed it, Hashem doesn't give him the ability to
chew. Well, presumably, when we talk about the 30 shekel of the slave, it's not an atonement. Even if it's an atonement, it's a fine. It's a set amount. It's considered a knas. If he admits on his own, so then he's not obligated. He's not obligated. He can choose to pay money, but he's not obligated. Modiv the knas pater. A person who comes in and tells us, I was a ganav, or I was the guy who embarrassed somebody, or I'm the guy whose animal killed a slave, and there's a knas obligation. We don't know about it from witnesses. We only know it from his own words. Modiv knas pater.
According to Torah law, if somebody commits the perfect crime, but then there's no witnesses and he admits it, he can't be his own...
he can't incriminate himself for knasos, for fine payments. Obviously, for damages, yes, but for the fine, not. So let's say a guy was a ganav, he was a burglar. So a burglar who gets caught by witnesses has to pay double. But he wasn't caught by witnesses. He came in on his own and admitted. So he would only pay the amount that he stole, but not the double. The double payment, the fine, that's already a knas.
For the actual crime.
The crime itself. Yeah, the damage that he caused, he has to pay in. That's money. That's not a fine. That's a monetary payment. The fact that he admitted doesn't exempt him from that.
But if he admits he killed somebody...
If a person, we didn't know about it from the courts, but we know about it from him, then he doesn't get put to death by his own words. Ein adam esam atzmo rasha. So Masiv Rav Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchak, Rav Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchak challenged this explanation. We learned in a brisa. Kol shechayev ben chorin, chayev be'evet. Any scenario that would be obligated with a free person, there is an obligation in that scenario with a slave. Bein b'kofar, bein b'misa. This is true both in regards to kofar and in regards to death. So kofar be'eved ma'iko. What do you mean? Where's their kofar in regards to an eved? The eved only gets 30 shekel. Elolav, so what is the b'risa being referring to? Dam, it's referring to the value of the eved. When the animal kills an eved, there is a value that was lost. And it's saying that the two things are the same. If you're chayev for ben chorin, you're chayev for eved. So how can you make the distinction and say no? So Ikadamri, so some explain who most of Lavu Mufarikla. Rabbi asked this question, and Rabbi answered it. Ikadamri, and others say, Amarle Rabba, that Rabba said, some say that Rav Shmuel Bar Rav Yitzchak answered it, and some say Rabba was the one who responded to Rav Shmuel Bar Rav Yitzchak. Kachi Katani, this is what the Braisa means. Kol Shechai Beven Chorin Bekavana. Any scenario of an ox that was intentional And al pi edim, and there were witnesses. And the a freed man was killed. And then we obligated kofar. Such scenarios, chayiv be'eved knas, if it was intentional and there were witnesses against a slave, he has to pay the fine of 30 shekel. V'chal shechayiv ben chorin shelo b'chavana al pi edim damim. And let's say the ox was not intentional, wasn't trying to kill, and it ended up killing a person, and there were witnesses who saw it. So then you can't put the ox to death because it wasn't intentional. So if you can't put the ox to death, you also don't have a payment of kofar. But you would have to pay the value of the person who was lost, who was killed. Chayev be'eved, shelo b'kavan al pi edim damin. In a similar case, if my ox, without intention, killed a slave, and there were witnesses who saw him kill the slave, and the witnesses told us that he killed a slave, so then you pay the value of the ox. But and the point of the braisa is that this: whenever the ox can't be put to death, there is no payment of kofar. And when there's and the same way there's no payment of kofar, there's no payment of the shloshim shel eved. But you could have a scenario, in theory, where there would be a payment to the ben chorin, and there wouldn't be a payment to the eved. That's what Rabbah said.
Rabbi, if the eved has no family, where the money goes?
The master.
I know, but they have to pay 30 shekels to the eved.
To the owner of the eved.
The owner.
Rava said, if you're saying that when the ox killed a person and there were witnesses who saw it, but because there's no death penalty to the ox, because the ox did it unintentionally, there's a payment of damim. If so, isho shelo b'chavana, if a person lights a fire, and without intention it goes out and it kills someone, al pi edim, and there are witnesses who testify about that, neshalim damim. Let's say that the person should have to pay the value of the one who was burned. Maybe he does. How do you know that he does have to pay? Even if you're going to say from the following Mishnah, a man who lights a fire, and there is a goat tied next to it, or Evan Samachlo, or slave next to it, and they got burned, and the slave could have run away. Evan Kafus, so then Chayiv, he has to pay for the goat, he doesn't have to pay for the slave, because the slave should have run away. Evan Kafus, if the slave was tied, and there was a goat, and everything gets burned, Patri doesn't have to pay even for the goat, because of Kimle B'diradmine. So why don't we say there too? That since he's not being put to death because he didn't intend to kill, there should be a payment of money. Someone said, no, Amar Ish Lakish. Ish Lakish explained. There, he actually lit the body of the slave. So he can't say that he is Eish, or it's a mazik of Eish, he's a murderer, and he gets put to death. And there is Kimle B'diradmine. Since he's getting put to death for having killed the slave, he doesn't have to pay for anything else. Yeah, because of Kimli B'Dirabni, because he's a murderer. He's going to be given death. So you don't have to give him, you don't have to pay, make him pay money. So the Gemara brings a different source. From the following that we learned in a braisa, there's a stringency in fire, more than in pit. Sha'esh mu'edas lechol esh is, you know, a mua to destroy, bein davar roila, things that normally it eats, like wood, bein davar shein roila, or other things like land, mashen kim bebor, whereas a pit, you only are obligated for things that are normally damaged in a pit. But the fact that in a case when a person wasn't intending to kill someone, and the fire killed someone, he has to pay the value of that person, mashen kim bebor, which isn't true in a pit, lo katani, wasn't mentioned. So the Gemara said, Tilbatan of a shire, maybe it was just left out. El Rav Gufes, the truth is, says the Gemara, Rav himself, he wasn't sure, and he was asking this as a question. Isha Shaloba Kavana, what would be the halach if a person lights a fire and without intention kills someone? Mimashalim Dam Malo, would he now have to pay damages for having killed that person? In other words, mi amrina and gabe shor hu de bekavana mashalim kofer, shaloba kavana mashalim damim. in ox when it was unintentionally killed someone, he has to pay the value. Avalisha do bekavan alo mashalim kofer, but a man, when he lights a fire, if he does it intentionally, he certainly doesn't pay kofer. Then maybe shalom bekavan anami lo mashalim dam, then even when it wasn't intentional, he doesn't pay value. I'll do more maybe. Came with the gabe shor shalom bekavan afa gavdaleka kofer mashalim damim. The same way we see that with an ox. If it was unintentional, it has to pay the value. Gabi isho nami afa gavdu bekavan alo mashalim kofer. Even though in a fire, when it was intentional, you don't pay kofer. Shalom b'kavana, maybe when it's not intentional, mia mishalim dami, maybe you do have to pay for the value. V'lo yadina, we don't know. Teku, we never resolved this.